贯彻有水狂抽，继续灯力无限，一直在线，英俄发意，系波就讲，靠仔同你祝 Magazine 五周年快乐。
好，翻到第二節，我哋嘅特別節目啊，咁啊訪問呢個極度資深嘅記者，
好多奇遇嘅，
好多奇遇，係啊 ，Francis 莫錢，我哋好大嘅榮幸啦，咁樣，咁啊繼續 Hooten 梅長喺度啦 ，Chip Up 喺度啦，咁樣，咁首先咧就講咗之前嘅一啲故仔，咁啊終於 finally we come to Hong Kong， yeah， so
you can use my Chinese name now， right？
Oh， you have a nickname， right？
Yeah， well， yeah， I have many nicknames， but the official Chinese name is Mok Fan Si。
Mok Fan Si， yeah，
yeah， okay，
yeah， and I heard you introduce。You have a nickname?
Oh, I have so many people. Ma Fan,
Ma Fan,
yeah, Mo Lei Tao,
Guai Lao,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. yeah, yeah. So you have many
Ma Fan, yeah, is another one.
Ma Fan, yeah, yeah, yeah. You're the troublemaker.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah. 咁啊，Francis 咧，咁啊講咗好長時間就喺 RTHK 啦，係啦，咁一個senior reporter 啦，咁之前喺新城其實都有做過嘅，咁啊再之前就發新社啦，咁但係因為咧太多故仔啦嚇，咁啊可能我哋要問啊 Francis 啲比較重點。
系
啦系啦 ，so I would like to ask because there's some your interview after you are being retired. you said you you at Hong Kong many long time and you quote said you think you see Hong Kong go downhill from glory to ruin. So
well the words glory to ruin were
is it direct quote?
no
no.
It's what you might call a liberal paraphrase.
Okay.
But what I said was along the lines that I'd seen what was a very good place and which seemed to be in decline, but I hoped would turn itself around.
So many stories.
Well, I covered the Legislative Council for a long time, and I covered it at a very granular level.
I just want to ask about the sequence. So you start when you're in Hong Kong, in the very beginning.
I went from AFP, and then I worked briefly for commercial radio. And they needed somebody to help them out because the first Gulf War had started, and there was just so much news and copy. They needed somebody, so I worked basically copy editing and news reading.
Okay.
And then...
So that was AFP is before 1989, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, no, no. Through 89 and into mid-91.
Mid-91. Mm. And then the Gulf War came.
And then the Gulf War, and then, right.
And commercial radio.
And then the government tendered the first new license for broadcasting in 30 years.
And Lee Carson got it.
I contacted two of there were three competitors. Mm-hmm. I contacted two, and they both offered me a job if they got the tender. And I figured, well, two out of three, my odds are pretty good. And Metro News, which had three radio stations, right? It had the all-English 24-hour news, and it had hit radio, and then it had FM Select, sort of bilingual, whatever.
Yeah.
And I did that for a number of years until there was a big cutback. Mm-hmm. I kept my job. I thought I was lucky to keep my job. I think I probably would have been better off getting sacked because all of the people who got sacked went off and started Channel News Asia and all these other sorts of things or went back to Britain and worked for the BBC. Mm-hmm. So who knows? So anyway, I stayed at Metro News, and at some point RTHK called me up and said, how would you like to be our lead reporter covering the handover? And I thought, but that's a pretty good gig. And I said, all right, but I need 4 months because my mother had just been sick, and my brother also lives in Hong Kong. And she was going to come out and visit her two sons.
Okay.
And I said, look, I want some time with her. Mm-hmm. She's going to be here for 4 months. Mm-hmm. So I'll start on April Fool's Day. Mm-hmm. and they said, okay, that's fine. That works out for us for bookkeeping reasons anyway, and that's it. So I went to work for RTHK in April.
Starting 1995,
yeah. Right? And I went out the door for the last time, and you saw me, if you saw the video flicking out the lights in the in the Apple video, it was the end of April of 2000 14.
We missed one piece of the jigsaw here. Was 89 your first time visiting Hong Kong?
I had never been to Hong Kong before. And I had my images of Hong Kong were all wrong.
what did you find out?
Junk boats and little boats down by the water where you could have dinner,
in the southern parts of the Hong Kong.
There were still one or two of those places, but they were too expensive.
Did you see the movie The Love Was a Very Many Splendid Thing?
You know, I didn't see that movie till after I came to Hong Kong.
Susie Wong.
Mm-hmm. And so that was sort of my image, you know, and I just didn't know what to expect. And I took a Singapore Airlines flight from mm-hmm. San Francisco, and they had to stop in Hawaii. Uh-huh. So we stopped in Hawaii, and for some reason the plane was delayed, and they opened up the doors and said, if you want to walk down the stairs and mm-hmm. walk around on the tarmac and stretch your legs, you can do that. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay. So I walked to the door of the plane, and I took one step, and I was overwhelmed by the aroma of every tropical flower mm-hmm. you could imagine. Mm-hmm. And I thought, if they weren't waiting for me in Hong Kong right now, mm-hmm. I would stay here mm-hmm. and see what it's like. Mm-hmm. I call and delay for a week or whatever, but they really wanted me on the following Monday. Mm-hmm. And I'd agreed to that, and they were shipping all my belongings to Hong Kong. And but the warmth of the air and the flowers, and I thought, man, if this is what it's like in Hawaii, yeah. I can't imagine what it's going to be like when I get to Hong Kong. Mm. Mm. So we fly into Kai Tak. Uh-huh. Right, and there's all these buildings side by side that are right next to the airplane. Yeah. And when the airplane starts to come into land, there's this odor.
Yeah,
and it ain't tropical flowers. It was the Kai Tak NOAA.
Yeah,
and I just thought, ooh, what have I made a mistake? Well, 30 years later.
Yeah, so it is called a fragrant harbor.
It was a very fragrant harbor. Let me tell you, on a warm night.
Uh-huh. No, but that. Okay, but you were supposed to send by AFP to Hong Kong just for a short string, right?
A two-year
assignment.
Two-year assignment, but normally they would extend you.
But what made you decide to take a job in the Far East? You never been here.
Because I was working as a full-time part-timer. In other words, working full-time at part-time pay for the International Herald Tribune as a copy editor in Paris. Mm-hmm. And I asked them for a full-time job at full-time money. Mm. And they said, we'll write a job into next year's budget. Mm. And I said, would you put that in a one-sentence letter? And the publisher responded with a very rude statement about what I could do. Mm. And I thought, uh-oh, if I stay here after being told that, I will never get anything. Mm-hmm. And AFP had offered me the job, and a good friend of mine in Paris who worked for AFP said to me, you know, sometimes you cannot make a career out of saying no. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to say yes. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, that's a wise statement, mm-hmm. you know. So, and then another friend of mine who was living in Paris, still one of my best friends, said, you know, I spent 7 years in Hong Kong, and I think it's a fabulous city. Mm. And I said, why did you leave? He said, because I knew at that point, if I didn't leave, I would never leave. Mm. And I thought, well, that's a pretty good recommendation, you know? And, so I came, and like him, I never left. Mm. Yeah, unlike him, I never left.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. But have you ever think of returning to your home country for that period of time? Because you wonder, you spend a lot of time in Europe already. Have you missed home when
I miss home, but every year I would fly back as long as my mother was alive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even after. Mm-hmm. I would fly back to the East Coast where my family lives up in Massachusetts.
But you had made up your mind that you may not extend your journalist career in America. Is that
Somebody had offered me something, but you know, I have to be honest and say, I didn't send out resumes and look for, you know, various jobs. I liked what I was doing. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a niche I was happy doing what I was doing. I had a certain expertise.
Mm-hmm.
I was respected for it. And in a way, I like doing community journalism, right?
Okay.
And that's what I was doing here.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, for not only for the community of Hong Kong, who those who could listen, but particularly most of our, not all, but many of our listeners were expatriates, and I became a link between the local world and the political world and the expatriate world, and I had a lot of followers, and that was a role that pleased me.
Yeah,
it was quite. I like the people. I like the place. Why not?
It's not very difficult to explain why people like to stay in Hong Kong.
Yeah,
especially in those days.
I'm already thinking about the things I'm going to miss when I go back. You know, I'll miss people, of course. That's the number one thing. I miss certain people, but I'm also going to miss food.
Now, if I go back to the RTHK, right, starting in '95, and since then you have been covering politics.
Yep. So, Sino-British relations, politics, and sometimes large legal stories. I mean, I covered the right of abode stuff in after 97, 99, and anything constitutional I covered.
Human rights issues.
Yeah, human rights issues, yeah. And but if it touched on the basic law, you know, cases. Mm. And also certain big legal cases like the Nancy Kissel murder case, the milkshake murder.
So how you think say as a long-term resident in Hong Kong, also a journalist, very close to politics here, so 95 now 2017, 22 years, how things have changed from your view? And I also want to hear about how your close friends in Hong Kong, the other fellow, you know, expatriate, maybe businessmen, lawyers, or journalists, who have also, you know, been here in Hong Kong for almost 30 years or more than 20 years, how usually they think of how Hong Kong have changed from 95 until today?
I can't be a spokesman for so many people. But I would say that there's a... Overall, we can break it down by category, but overall, I think that things are nowhere near as good as we had hoped, but not yet as bad as we had feared. I think that's sort of the general thing. And the addendum to that would be, it's hard to see things getting better. And I think that's the biggest burden for the incoming chief executive, Carrie Lam. I think she's got to find some way to make people believe that things are going to get better.
So what is the major force behind all these changes?
The fact that there is no change. The biggest problem of changes is that they're changes that are not happening normally. You know, there are changes that are happening because the system is completely bunged up. It's not working. It is a dysfunctional system. Nobody who was asked to design a government structure would sit down with a blank piece of paper and come up in the 21st century with functional constituencies. It just, you know, you can say what you want to about democracy and its faults and whatever, but this system is not working.
I mean, especially the functional constituency.
Well, that's the biggest difficulty. I mean, you can always hope for better legislators, however they come in.
Yeah.
But the functional constituency legislators, with a few exceptions, have not exactly covered themselves in glory. And there's an attitude problem. If I've only got to appeal to 36 people, or 180 people, or even 2,000 people.
Some of them may not even have one single vote.
Some of them may not. Some of them may be corporations that are voting. Yeah. You know, the system is just, it's truly, truly dysfunctional. And I think that the Chinese, the mainland Chinese, have got themselves in a bit of a bind because they want, on one hand, to remain faithful to the system of one country, two systems, and what's said in the basic law. And it says, you know, the system in place will not change. But at the same time, they've made a promise that it will move toward democracy. How do you balance those two things? The system won't change with, so every change is de minimis. It's the smallest possible change that, that you could get. And it's contradictory because take the famous August proposal from Beijing. You can have two and possibly three candidates to vote for. Well, if I can understand people who say, I really want that vote. That vote would mean something to me. I really want it. And believe me, they will say, if you have a vote and the candidates have to go around all of Hong Kong, it will change them. But we all know that the system of choosing those two candidates would have been altered such that either of the candidates or the third candidate, if that was allowed to happen, which is now, we now have to question because of what happened to Regina Yip. You know you would end up with a kind of Tweedledum, Tweedledee situation. So I can see the people who didn't want the Tweedledum, Tweedledee. It's not a meaningful choice. I can also see the side of the people who go, give me the vote, make him campaign, and let's see what happens. But that's not the real change that you need. You need a whole change in mentality. You need a change in structure. It will not solve all of your problems. But the great virtue of democracy is two things. It's not that you can elect your leaders. It's that you can kick them out of office. Without violence, without a revolution, you can get them out of office, right? The second thing is, if you think of a pyramid, and your leader is on the top, this is very Confucian sounding, but responsibility doesn't just run down. Support also runs up, right? The piece of stone on the top of the pyramid doesn't fall down because it's supported by all the ones below. So if you elect a leader, and he or she turns out to be not good, right? You voted for that person. You have some responsibility yourself for having made that choice. If at some point enough voters think, I liked Trump and what he says, but I don't like Trump and what he does, there will be a change. And that's the virtue. That's what you can do. And everybody has to take some responsibility. If you've got a vote to cast and you don't cast it, you can't complain too much. If you cast the ballot and you work on behalf of candidates, you hope it works out. But you are part of that process. And right now in Hong Kong, the people are by and large separated from that process. They don't feel themselves having any responsibility for that process. They don't feel necessarily any identity with the people who are who are being elected. And worse, when people play the game and they try to run, they use the law now to step in and have you disqualified by the returning officer so you can't be on the ballot. You get elected and you didn't do your oath right. You did your oath right, but you turned the flags over on the stand. you didn't say something inside the Legislative Council chamber. You said it in the hallway of the Legislative Council. Now you're eligible for libel. Right? And in Hong Kong, I want to remind people, Hong Kong has criminal libel on the statutes books. It's one of only three or four maybe places in Asia that has criminal libel on the books. We journalists organizations, the HKJA and the in the FCC, have urged the removal of criminal libel from the books. Nobody's ever done it. So where do we go from here?
I want to clarify a point. If we go back to 2015, would you have agree or disagree with that proposed political reform?
I can see both sides. I can see both sides. I can see the people who say, give me that vote. Remember, there's no other, there's some tiny villages, and even there it's, but there's no other city of any size in China that has an opportunity to cast a ballot. I think that alone would have separated Hong Kong out in some way from the rest of China, because people would say, hey, look, the Hong Kong people get to vote for their guy.
Yeah.
What about us?
Yeah.
What are we, what are we, to use an American expression, are we chopped liver? You know, give us that. That, I think, would have been a persuasive point. But frankly, people weren't thinking about the rest of China. They were thinking about Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And Hong Kong, please don't take offense, but I want to be honest. Hong Kong has a sense to sometimes gaze at its navel. If you know that expression, and things can become very meaningful but very small, and I think if they maybe step back and said, okay, if we take this, what's the resonating effect? Is there a magnifier, right? Then maybe you might have got something a little bit
so
different.
You know, opinion, we should have taken that deal.
I'm saying there's two cases to be made. I can see both cases. I mean, I'm a Hong Kong voter, but at the end of the day, no matter how many years I live here, I'll never really be a Hong Kong person. We all know that. And so I have to leave the decision to the people who will be here and whose kids will be here. And they'll have to sort of. Well, I'll tell you one thing I don't like. I don't like something I see that's happening. Apple, which we referred to, has had a story, and there's been language talking about mixed-race people.
You mean Abu Dhabi?
Abu Dhabi?
Yeah. There's been a story about...
Can you tell about it?
I can't read Chinese, but I got the gist of it through some translation. But there was questioning whether there were beauty contestants or something.
Beauty contest. I see.
And whether they should be, mixed race contestants should be allowed to compete or whatever. But my point is not that story. My point is, I think that there are, as you see in the United States with Trump, there are people whose attitudes are really very narrow in different areas.
Yeah.
And the same thing that happened in the United States could, in its own way, happen here. I mean, the political base is already fragmenting in the Democratic movement into various pieces. Some of which just say we don't really care about democracy. We want independence or something. Whatever. Yeah.
I think in the past few years in the mass media of Hong Kong, they're promoting some kind of a sentiment that it's better off we do nothing. And I don't know. I'm not sure if you get this or not. But this. They are being very cynical towards everything because of the disappointments and the depressions and the frustration that they cannot get anything.
That's right. I was talking before we had this interview with some friends, four friends who collectively have I don't know how many years in Hong Kong. And we agreed on one point, which was it's hard to see things getting better. And this, in my view, is the biggest challenge for Carrie Lam, as I mentioned earlier. She's got to somehow give people the sense that the past wasn't the best. There's still good to come. And I think it's going to be very hard for her to do that. And I think the second thing, which is just an observation, this government, her government, Carrie Lam's government, is really back to the future. It's going back to the days when it's basically scrapping Chung Shih-hwa's accountability system that never really worked and nobody was accountable. So now
except two or three casualties.
But they weren't really held. They resigned. They left. They got whatever happened to them. But they weren't really. You didn't have a chief executive say, you are fired. It didn't happen. Even though there were some serious issues, so and now you've got a civil service government. So at least you've got some accountability in a real way, because you get the head of the civil service. You're going to have Matthew Cheung. You're going to have Kerry. They know who's who. They know who's good, who's not, whatever in their view, and they can enforce a certain accountability through that process. And that may be an improvement over where we are now, frankly. But it's not a replacement for having a system where the accountability is to the people directly.
But the exception is Paul Chan. He was not a civil servant, but now he's occupying the most important position in the cabinet.
Financial.
Right. Secretary.
Yeah. He's one of the exceptions. The Secretary for the Environment is another exception.
He's the one mole that the most of the people are the most unhappy about.
Mm. Well, he's been a replacement FS.
Mm.
And who knew that was going to happen? Mm. Okay. Let's see. Occasionally in life, people rise to a challenge. They exceed themselves. Let's see. Because he's going to have influence on policy for sure. Mm. But rest assured that the central government knows that the chief executive is the chief executive. Mm. And if she wishes to exert her position as chief executive with the backing of Beijing, the FS is going to, the FS has to get in line. There's, you can't have warfare between them.
Now, when we now touch Carrie Lam, all right, okay, there are two things interesting. Today's lunch, I have a lunch with a senior journalist and professor. Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't want to name who.
No, that's fine.
Okay, he mentioned two things. He said there's a possibility that from his read about the history of Carrie, there's a Carrie was a Hong Kong girl.
Yeah, she's a Hong Kong girl.
Unlike Tong Chi Hua.
Well, why was CY not a Hong Kong girl?
The people don't feel his.
Oh, they don't feel his principle, but he actually,
and
but
his
he was,
value. Share the comment.
Okay, but he was born. Okay.
Yeah, he was born. Yeah, okay, yeah. But don't people feel this guy is one of the Hong Kongers? But a lot of people still feel Carrie is one of the Hong Kongers.
Mm-hmm.
She still has some bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
At a certain point, I mean, because
I think being with CY 5 years hurt her.
Huh?
Her credibility was seriously damaged
by
5 years with CY.
But during her campaign, she did mention something like that. If there is something that she was really pushed to a certain point, she might throw the towel and just quit the post.
Probably the best thing that could happen.
Yeah.
Frankly,
some people still, I mean, so think that Carrie may still be a person of some, at least some principle. I'm not sure whether you agree.
Well, I will say this a little bit on that point.
Mm-hmm.
Carrie Lam and I are coincidentally, I'm a little older.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but basically the same generation, and we have similarities, as did Chris Patton and Martin Lee and Anson Chan. We all came up in the Catholic Church,
yes,
at a time when the Catholic Church had a very strong notion of service, and they really drilled it into students everywhere, because it's the Catholic means universal, right? They drill wherever you lived. They drilled into you the idea that you don't just take; you give something back, and you serve people, you serve the community, and I think that Carrie, like some of the other people I mentioned, and some others who are politically on the other side of the fence, but they have a different point of view politically. But I think they have the same impulse to serve. I think she will be limited in some ways. Constrained is the better word. Mm-hmm. I think she will be constrained in some ways because she has an active sense of conscience and because she has that very strong sense of service. I mean, she didn't have to do any of this. She had 38 years or whatever in government.
Civil service.
Yeah, she could have retired very happily and gone to a little rose garden in Britain.
England. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, and not have to put up with all this guff. Mm-hmm. Whatever the discussions were, whatever her reasons were, I think that someplace in there had to be this sense that if I can do something for Hong Kong, I've got to try to do it. I can't walk away.
Mm.
All right? I think that's a very strong impulse in her.
Mm-hmm.
So when she says, if it abrogated my conscience, I'm out the door.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a serious statement.
That was before the campaign, before he had the chance to won the election. That was before. Mm-hmm. The statement was made mm-hmm. before.
But mm-hmm. it still holds true.
I hope so.
Yeah, but yeah. No. You. I think she's serious about that for the reasons mm-hmm. that I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I think that her training,
yeah,
her faith, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing come together. I mm-hmm. mean, if you have a crisis of conscience,
yeah,
your conscience should win.
And many would have predicted Carrie Lam would focus more on the welfare other than political issues of Hong Kong.
She knows that there's no political development
that she can solve
that mm-hmm. isn't approved or instigated mm-hmm. by Beijing. It's mm-hmm. not going to happen. Yeah. So you just have to accept that's not going to happen. I'm not going to waste my time.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, look at, again, oddly enough, look at Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Trump came in promising that there was going to be jobs.
Uh-huh.
And they were going to have all these infrastructure programs. Well, just yesterday or whatever, was he had a meeting of people to discuss infrastructure. Mm-hmm. He's wasted his time on a very divisive debate on health care.
Mm-hmm.
And the bill may not get through, and then it's got to go to the House, and it's going to be kicked around. And he's lost time, he's lost energy, he's losing sleep tweeting. You know, he should have just said jobs, jobs, jobs,
mm-hmm.
and he would be in a much stronger position today. Mm-hmm. So if Carrie comes in and says political stuff, I can't see it. I'm not going to beat my head against a wall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to try to solve other things like Article 23.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I am of the opinion that the Pan Democrats should have instituted Article 23
mm-hmm.
in a very different way.
Mm-hmm.
You can go back and look at the Hong Kong Bar Association report in mm-hmm. 2003,
mm-hmm.
which lists out all of the laws that are on the books already
mm-hmm.
that can fulfill the requirements of Article 23. There's one or two places where you may need something new,
mm-hmm.
but in fact, some of them are draconian
mm-hmm.
and should be modernized abolished. And liberalized, or, well, not necessarily abolished because mm-hmm. you're going to need something to replace it,
yeah.
but you can take the existing law and modify it, dilute it in a way that would make it more modern and suitable and presentable and not something so badly British colonial,
because
mm-hmm. some British colonial laws mm-hmm. were very draconian.
Mm-hmm.
So
you want the pan-democratic to take the initiative?
I think they should have done it.
Yeah.
You know, now the government's going to do it. But the Pan Democrats have always said, we can't introduce legislation. It's even harder now than it was under the Brits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't introduce legislation. It's the government's responsibility. Let them take it. We'll just sit back and snipe mm-hmm. and criticize or maybe make constructive suggestions for improvement, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's their responsibility. Let them have it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they should have instigated debates and discussion on how that you want to do this because it's mandated
mm-hmm.
And how to do it in a way that's acceptable to the people, to the legal community, to the judiciary. And to, for one thing, avoid putting judges mm-hmm. in terrible positions where they're going to have to implement laws
mm-hmm.
they look at and go, ooh, you know? You know, that's not going to be good for the judiciary.
Do you think she has a chance to do it? I mean, do it through a process of open discussion of the judges, the lawyer profession.
All right, let me tell you an anecdote.
What if the central government just want her to hardball it, that's it?
No, I think that they're too smart. And when in 2003, when everything hit the fan,
mm.
there was a meeting of journalists with the then Secretary for Security, Ambrose Lee.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And everybody was going out the door. It was down in the old...
Ambrose Lee had Lei Siu Guang.
Everybody was going down the steps, and I deliberately shuffled my papers and waited till mm-hmm. near the end. And I said, you know, Secretary, are you... When you bring this legislation back, as one day you will, are you going to bring it back as one big piece of omnibus legislation, one bill fits all for all these things in one bill?
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me and he said, Francis, if we have learned anything from this whole experience, it is that there will be no more omnibus bills. So you will not get what we call in the United States a horse tablet, right? Which is a pill so big a horse can swallow it, but a human being would choke to death, right?
Mm.
They're not going to give you that. I think the one decision that they've made is that they will be pieces of legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've made that decision, it makes sense that you will sequence the simplest pieces first, the least controversial ones first, and build up and get them on the books and build some confidence. And then the tougher ones, like sedition, which has been a problem everywhere in the world. People try to put in sedition laws. When you get to those things, you then have a spirit and a means to try to solve and discuss in a proper way. Or maybe you defer some pieces and say we've reached on 4 out of 5, and we'll continue on some of them. You know, theft of state secrets. We can use the existing official secrets thing. We just give it a different name or whatever. You know, and we let things ride a little bit.
Mm.
You know. So sequencing, patience, and an understanding on both sides of, you know, it's kind of like the North Korea problem. You know, it's each side is going to have to give up something because right now it's a stalemate. So you're going to have to find something somewhere that you can move on to create an atmosphere where you can move on to the harder thing.
And so do you think politics, journalism is Hong Kong, which is one of the reasons why so many Hong Kong people are not concerned about politics or something like
that? I think Hong Kong people are concerned about issues. I think they feel that they can't affect them the way they would like to.
Mm-hmm.
I think they can see that the whole system is paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a very perceptive and practical response.
Mm-hmm.
As for journalism, let's for a moment, I say this on online radio, let's put online journalism to the side for a moment.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at traditional forms of journalism in Hong Kong today, it's apparent, it's obvious in your face that things are not what they were.
Mm.
You don't have as many outlets. You don't have...
just the paper don't sell and people don't buy.
Well, why it's the case, well... Publications have been bought up and closed.
Mm-hmm.
Publications have had other editors put in place who take a different editorial line.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of reasons why things change. But the point is, just in sheer volume and numbers, you know, you don't have the same number of newspapers of record, newspapers that really follow certain things. They've softened up, or they've gone in another direction, or they've shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Ownership has changed.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very different environment. I mean, South China Morning Post.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
I won't say it was ever a perfect paper, but my God, look at look at the paper today.
Mm-hmm.
That's a signal, you know, right there. So what supplemented it for the time being is online news.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if you look at the whole thing and you're looking at, you know, Initium, and you're looking at Stand and House and FactWire and all those things. Hong Kong 01, is it?
Hong Kong 01. Hong Kong 01.
Yeah, and you can see that they're at Hong Kong Free Press, in English. There's a sort of flowering there. It's expensive, you know, and to have a big staff costs money.
Mm.
And, you know, nobody is making big money off the internet except the people who are the internet providers.
Mm.
You know, nobody has figured out the foolproof way. The Washington Post has got you behind a firewall, and Jeff Bezos has more money than, you know, the ancient pharaohs. And the Boston Globe puts you behind a firewall after a while, and the LA Times has got you behind one. The New York Times has got you behind one, and South China Morning Post has gone the other way because you've got Jack Ma.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But because the paper has a philosophical purpose, the purpose is not so that the world can learn something about Hong Kong. It's not. This is a way for what China wants the world to see and think to be transmitted to the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's an outward messaging, not an inward messaging. And so that's kind of where we are. Also, people aren't supporting papers or they're not buying them as much, and they're under stress. And so they turn to online sources, which are free, but you can't function for free for very long. And so I think the picture looks better than it is because we have this opportunity. We're not behind the Chinese firewall. The Hong Kong government is not. Yeah, exactly. Is not censoring us. China does involve itself. We've had speakers, Jimmy Lai, for example.
Jimmy Lai.
And Bishop Zen. Cardinal Zen. And they've spoken at the FCC. Now, if you want...
Bishop Zen,
So if you want to access the FCC website from China, you can do it. We are not blocked. But if the Chinese don't like somebody... they can do a simple word block.
Yeah.
And you see that Bishop Zen spoke and you want to click the story.
Andy Lau, we go.
Already it is happening.
Yeah. It happened years ago.
Yeah, this is not new.
Yeah. This is not new. Yeah. You know, we're talking a few years back.
Yeah.
So they have the ability to do a single word search.
Yeah.
I mean, let me tell you how good they can be. I was covering the Bill Clinton visit to China. And I was in the press room. Now, the press room was set up by AT&T, American company, and set up to be perfectly secure, and you should be able to access everything.
That was during the presidency of Clinton.
Yeah, when he was visiting China.
In Beijing?
Shanghai and then Beijing.
Shanghai.
And then elsewhere. Xi'an.
Yeah.
So I'm in the press room, and I can't access Gmail. And I'm trying to use HTTPS, which you guys will know.
Security.
Right, exactly. Secure. And it's not working. Every time I hit it, so I go up to this guy, and he is a White House staffer. I say, man, I can't get this to work. And the AT&T guy couldn't seem to solve it. And he says, let me try it on a White House computer. Right?
What?
That ought to be able to work. Types it in and it's not working. He can't get to, and I realize what's happening. It's so simple, but so elegant. They have made it so that if you type the S on HTTP, it will automatically switch you to the public Google, not the secret Google. And, I mean, really, really, that's just good. I hate to say it. It's bad, but it's really elegantly done. So, We get up to Beijing, ATT room again, you know, set up, supposed to be secure. I look up my emails, and I see a few things, and somebody I know who's a specialist in Tibet has written something in, you know, whatever. And as I'm looking at my emails, suddenly a cursor
goes through, without your control, at almost the speed of light.
Couldn't stop it.
Yeah.
Couldn't do any. It just moves through, and the stories just go off the screen and are inaccessible anymore. Okay? Right? Third story. I'm in Beijing to do a story about the first professional baseball game, and all the stuff breaks out in Tibet, the Tibet uprising, you know, and the crackdown. So I'm trying to...
That was before the Beijing Olympics.
Yep, just before. So I'm trying to file stories about what's happening. CNN, certain programs are disappearing. The sound is disappearing from certain programs. You can see who's there, but you can't see other stuff. Suddenly it comes on and you can hear the CNN jingle music or whatever, but the program disappears or parts of the program disappear. And I'm trying to operate. And very quickly, the email's gone. So I start using VPNs. Somebody provided me with a list of about 36 VPNs. And I would log on to the VPNs, and I could use each one for about 2 or 3 minutes. Gone. Yeah. 2 or 3 minutes to get it on. Gone. I finally, my emails start appearing. I can go to trash. That's the only thing that will work. I can empty the trash, right? I can go to spam, and I can empty the spam.
Yeah.
Next, that comes next. You know, later I can access emails I've sent.
Mm.
The last thing inbox. Is emails that were the inbox that was sent to me. And there were three individuals from whom I could not receive or open emails at all. One was a specialist in Tibet, another was a Tibetan, and the third guy, weirdly enough, but he happens to be a professor who's specializes in human rights.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. You know, now why? But he didn't write anything that would be, for some reason, he just got into the mix.
Mm-hmm.
I could never access anything from them
mm-hmm.
until yeah. I got back to Hong Kong, and then it all appears. So I mean, that's we're not entirely free, and we are affected, even though we may think that we're not inside the firewall. It still is having its own effect.
Mm-hmm. 明白
okay, 好了第二 session 完了，或者很精彩，讲了很多东西，我们又扼要翻少少，不过记得Francis刚才提过有一句说话，他类似这样讲，就是说对于这20年的总结，就没好像想象那么好，但也没有初时预期那么差，那么多恐惧的东西。 佢應該係最worst case，最差嘅情況都未發生，因為我呢一節都係講下佢點樣睇呢20年香港啦。另外一點就提到所謂功能組別啦，即係一個 functional 嘅 constituency 就唔 function 嘅，即係完全發揮唔到。佢有咁講法啦，就算冇講話啲功能組別嘅議員嘅質素本身已經好差啦，你可能可以。
等一啲好嘅議員出現，但本身呢一件事已經係一件公義，同埋一個完全冇任何功能，亦都發揮唔到作用嘅一個制度。
種制度係一種保存現有狀況，令到個社會好難發展、好難轉嘅。咁啊，佢話佢有比喻就話，根本你中國嗰個基本法設計就話，第一佢又應承話你50年不變，好硬掘掘要求你成個制度唔喐，但係有應承你班香港人咧有民主，好耐冇噶嘛。咁即係一邊佢應承你咩？ 都唔改，另外一邊又仲要開張空頭支票俾你，咁變咗咧就搞到就本身已經係矛盾啦。係啦，本身就好捉蟲嘅，即係對，甚至對嗰個基本法嘅設計者嚟講係捉蟲嘅。咁啊，仲有一點就提到，我有問佢呢個關於政改點睇啦。2015，咁佢啊好tactful，即係好有技巧，佢就睇到兩邊啊，即係呢個政改都有兩邊嘅咁樣。咁但係我就隱約覺得佢其實係你甚至接受咧收貨，其實都OK，因為佢話佢用咗一句咧，就阿 Francis 就話 gaze at your own navel， 即係英文嘅一個成語，即係意思話你淨係睇住你肚臍，即係話當時香港人咧就即係好執著，淨係睇住本土，睇住自己香港。如果你個眼界闊少少，睇住成個中國嚟睇咧，佢即係佢個人覺得就係話。 你如果接受咗政改咧，其實對中國嗰個影響咧，其他地方影響係可以好大。
佢都舉嗰個例嘅，因為即係而家現有中國某啲農村係有一啲選舉咁樣噶嘛。咁但係除此以外咧，基本上即係大陸係冇所謂嘅民主選舉。咁如果香港係大城市，係啦，大城市，如果做頭一個榜樣嘅話咧，慢慢可以將呢一個信息咧帶翻去大陸，咁到時可能會改變到大陸都未定。
其實唔止佢，我所識一啲外國朋友，好多時候喺2年前都係咁講嘅。點解你哋？
收貨咧咁樣，其實好多人都係有咁樣嘅睇法嘅。OK，咁就仲有啲咩補充啊？仲有啲咩？仲有補充。咁啊，另外阿Francis都提到林鄭啦。咁佢對於林鄭嚟緊未來嗰5年喺香港嗰個所謂嘅管治，佢都有啲期望嘅嚇。咁因為佢覺得即係你5年其實好多，你過去呢20年啦，其實香港冇咩嘢變過啦，俾唔到咩希望俾香港人啦嚇。咁但係佢有信心，林鄭可能係會做翻少少微調，做翻一啲好事啦嚇，即係可能比較關注於民生嗰方面咧，就令到香港人。 調氣順翻啲，覺得仲有一啲希望喺未來嗰度。咁另外一點我仲有想提嘅就係頭先啊，Francis都提過呢個六四事件啦。咁佢嗰陣時咧就喺89年六四。 8號風球嗰個遊行咧，佢喺現場嘅。咁記得佢當時咧就覺得好感動啦，因為喺一個8號風球
咁多人落即係咁大雨嘅情況之下，就有超過80,000嘅香港人就上街示威啦，咁啊對抗個政權啦。咁佢好歷歷在目嘅一刻咧，就係佢記得嗰陣咧，就阿張文光喺台上嘅一個即係負責説話，即係講話嘅人啦。佢咪要求民眾咧就即係先放低把遮，咁就做一分鐘嘅默哀。咁佢自己作為一個記者，當時咧其實就喺度攞住本即係簿仔，就想抄低一啲細節啊，寫低啲咩嘢咁樣。咁就有好多好心嘅香港人咧，就遞把遮俾佢，就俾佢寫低件事。咁同埋好語重心長咁同佢講一句説話，就係、是我哋希望你寫低，又講翻俾你哋嘅人民聽，我哋度香港發生咩事，中國發生嗰啲咩事。咁呢一點係到而家阿 Francis 都覺得好感動，覺得係而且亦都決定咗喺香港要有翻事業啦，希望係回歸翻喺香港信任佢嘅咁多人咯。
係，咁我哋暫時 break 啊，咁之後 Francis 再講其他香港話。
Horsey!